This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't resent the medication anymore, but for years I felt like, why am I taking you? You are literally making me unhappy. You are making me a worse version of myself. This is not fair. Then I have to remind myself that for every hypomanic episode I've had to pay for it times, 10. The depression is so not worth the mania, even though at the moment the mania feels so much better. The depression is so much longer and so much worse.
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I'm Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for parents to seek the same in their own lives while striving to be the best versions of themselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about while living your own life to the fullest. Today's show is She's Got Issues with Jill Smokler. Jill is a New York Times bestselling author and entrepreneur who became an authentic voice for millions of imperfect moms through her Webby Award-winning blog, Scary Mommy. Launched long time ago in 2008, Scary Mommy began as a chronicle of Jill's stay-at-home days with her children, and quickly transformed into a vibrant community of women brought together by a common theme: parenting doesn't have to be perfect. Over the next 8 years, without advertising dollars and on a shoestring budget, Jill and her team provided the destination for high quality, humorous, that is key, and shareable parenting content. In 2015, with millions upon millions of followers, 3 books, and the top parenting site in the country. I'm doing this to make Jill feel really uncomfortable.
I love it.
Yeah, she became the first mommy blogger to sell her brand to a media company. And after 3 years there as chief content officer, she departed. And after a much needed break, she returns with her new brand, multifaceted brand, She's Got Issues, a brand for Gen X women focusing on the myriad of issues uniting them. Forbes magazine named Jill a top 10 parenting influencer, and she has been a featured guest on the Today Show, Good Morning America, Nightline, Fox and Friends, and countless other media outlets. That is a mouthful. I had to say it all because it's so impressive. Jill, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dan. I'm really happy to be here. And I'm embarrassed because I realize I wrote some of that verbiage, and God, it's kind of obnoxious being read back to me. So well, I have to read
that. That's often the experience that I find. And when I'm going through it, I always struggle with cutting the stuff, which I think is so important. So I know it's uncomfortable to sit through it, but I felt it's important for everyone. I mean, most of our listeners, I am sure, know who you are. And for those who don't, they need to know who you are because you, and I know you hear this a lot, but you literally were the pioneer of this field, which didn't exist. Like this whole parenting, mommy, blogging, which now podcast, I mean, so much, but you really started it without knowing you were starting anything.
Which now that I'm starting something intentionally, starting something accidentally, is a far easier way to do it.
with planning.
Yeah, exactly. When it just sort of happens, that's the best way to start a business. But no, it was born out of my need at first really for a hobby and just sort of taking a swing at trying a blog because why not? And then quickly became the community that I needed myself. And, you know, turns out I wasn't the only one, fortunately.
You certainly were not. And when I became aware that we were going to do this interview, I had all of these flashbacks because my wife used to share all of your stuff with me. And our kids are, we're between right now 20 and 24, our three. Okay. And I know that you're just one tick below.
But we're
we were in the grind though when you were in the grind. And and the refreshing thing, so this was at a time, if I recall correctly, Facebook was exploding and everyone was just showing how perfect their lives were. And my wife and I are like, oh man, like ours are not like that. Like it's kind of a shit show at home. most of the time with these three born in a, you know, intense people, sensitive people born in a very short window of time. And all of a sudden your voice was out there and it was like, you were saying the things that we were all thinking and we were all saying, and I say we, but I know it's a scary mommy, but I felt in it with you as a involved dad as well.
Oh, I love that. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just me that you were resonating with. It was this whole swarm of women along with me who were the bloggers and the voices behind the brand. And that was what was so cool about it, was graduated from just being me and my singular voice about my little experience about motherhood into something that was so much wider than that.
Yeah. Yes. So yeah, thank you for broadening it to all the people who contributed. And it became, you know, we call it a brand, but I think that's the business language for it, because it, I don't know what the right word is. It became a space to me. Like it became a space of honesty and where you could just say what's really going on. And again, I think at a time when perfection, and we know with social media, and I know that you don't like it much like me as well, like it still reigns, like social media reigns, and what's often being put out there is these unobtainable, unrealistic things about life and about parenting and about being human. And it's just so nice that we're getting a movement towards authenticity, rawness, and transparency.
I think so too. And I think these days you have either the picture perfect portrayals or you have sort of the disaster, you know, reality, but scripted sort of disaster, not really the authentic, what it's really like in the grind, just sort of like the flops and failures. But it's all there.
Well, and you're continuing, with She's Got Issues. I mean, you're putting it right out there and it's just kind of like, we all have issues and, and on the podcast and now the new magazine, which congratulations, sounds like that's been something that you've been wanting to do for a long time. You're putting it out there still with your guests and I mean the topics from divorce to grief, to money, to sex, to cannabis, to psychedelics, to intimacy, menopause, perimenopause, like all of the, like one decade later, right? Or one to 1.5 decades later, like life keeps happening and these raw and authentic conversations that you're putting out there with amazing people continue to relate to the regular person out there just trying to be human.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. That means a lot, truly. I feel like my audience and my community has grown up along with me. And it started out, you know, in the muck of little kids when, you know, my biggest problem was that I forgot it was pajama day and I sent the kids to school in pajamas on a day when it wasn't, you know, oops, little funny, you know, mishaps. And She's Got Issues is much more, me with the kid element taken out. I mean, I have older kids now, so they're definitely a part of my life and a part of the larger brands, but it's more looking at ourselves at this point. And once we are empty nesters and it's not, our life is not all focused around the kids, what else we're struggling with. And when the stuff is involved, revolving around the kids, how to do that, because it's so different with older kids and so much more complicated than it was with little ones. I long for the days of little ones because it was just so easy. Every decision was that seemed so complicated was just, you know, pretty simple.
Well, in my experience, it was so hard and yet in contrast to grown up kids and growing up kids and teenagers. You just like, okay, I would take back the physical exhaustion for the now emotional and psychological exhaustion.
Yes, I absolutely. And, you know, it's as exhausting as that physical, you know, drain is, and having three, as you know, little bodies hanging on you all the time. Now I'm like, I try to attack my kids for some affection.
Right.
Totally. Bribing them.
Yes. Yes, as that country song, "The Last Time for Everything," right? No one gives us the memo when all of these things just end. They just one day, incrementally, they just, for each child, they just, you're done reading to me, or you're done hugging me and kissing me goodnight. And it's like, wait, what?
You're done smelling good. Like, I just didn't appreciate that one last sniff.
Yeah, it'd be so nice to have a 1 month transition point, right? So we could just appreciate it.
It would, because then in the worst of things, you'd know at least it's coming to an end. This phase is not going to last forever.
So what did, I'm curious about, because I think that you sharing yourself as you do, to me, is really courageous. And people look to you to be this honest, authentic person, which from watching a lot of your interviews and listening to a lot of your stuff, I just feel like you really do embody, like you truly show up as who, it seems to me, who you are. Is there a line, like, you're talking about really more and more personal things. Do you think about, okay, I want to share this, but maybe I shouldn't, or, oh gosh, I maybe did a little too much there. You know, like, do you have a guide?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I've definitely moved beyond that guidepost.
Yeah.
But at this point, I feel like there's so much of me out there that there's very little that I can hide, which is kind of liberating. Yeah, I think especially with my divorce and the fallout after it, I think I was a little more open than I wish I had been in retrospect. But I'm just naturally someone who really doesn't have very many boundaries and likes talking. And so that's sort of just what I do, is like talk without a filter.
I think it is liberating. I mean, I imagine it being liberating. It's like when you don't have secrets, or, you know, like if we're not feeling protective of these things, when I think of secrets, I think of shame, right? I think of the shame that people carry about these aspects of themselves that we don't want people to know about us because we feel badly about ourselves. And when they're out there, or you just feel like, you know what, I don't have anything to hide, it seems like it is psychologically liberating.
It is. That being said, I'm not like dancing naked in my backyard celebrating all the time. It doesn't quite feel like that.
Right.
But yeah, I think it is nice to, what was so wonderful about Scary Mommy the whole time was that it was so authentic to me that I never had to question like, oops, is this the right tone? Is this am I portraying the right thing? It was just whatever my gut reaction was. Like that was what we did, because it was just whatever I was comfortable with. That's what the brand was, which which was a really good thing for me because if I had to be calculated in any way, I would not have been able to sustain it because it's just not who I am. That being said, are there lines? I won't talk about my kids, their specific lives now. But the stuff that I don't really love addressing, I am, and I think that's what's so relatable. That was always what was so profound about the blog, was when I would really open up and share, you know, just either how insecure or what I was struggling with. That's when people really responded and really, you know, rallied and gave me the most support. I certainly find that now. Yeah, it's not always easy, but it's usually worth it.
Yeah, and I you're bringing up an important point about the hardest things that you share are often the things that are the most helpful to people. And I had my own experiences with in my training as a psychologist when I was coming through. It was really, you know, no self-disclosure. You know, it's all about the client, and which it is all about the client. But I found as I was getting older and had more life experience and doing a lot of parenting work and being in the trenches, there seemed times that it was relevant for me to share an experience with the mindset of, I think this will help my client for what we're dealing with. And when I would give talks, I'd start to do that too. And I got, you know, some of the older people in the field were like, you know, that's sharing a little too much. But time and time again, and then eventually in a book writing this stuff, and my publisher was like, they're going to think you're kind of nutsy if you share this. And he's a wonderful man. He was older generation. And I'm like, you know what I'm finding is people are saying the most helpful thing they hear is when I'm actually real and give them a life experience and a lesson that I learned or that I'm dealing with that relates to them. And it was this whole shift for me of like, you know, as long as we can keep, well, especially in the field, like some boundaries and be very mindful, those are the most powerful, can be more of the most powerful helping and healing moments for people who we're sharing this human experience with.
Yes. And so much of what we're dealing with is so universal. And it is, you know, the things that you're the most ashamed of that you keep the closest to you. It turns out, you know, everybody else holds the same things close to them. And it's so comforting to, to be shown that.
Yeah. I was just on a long plane ride and watched a few documentaries, and one was on Joan Baez. And the beginning of the documentary, there was a quote that I can't remember who the quote was, but I thought it was very powerful, which was people have three lives, their public life, their private life, and their secret life. And this documentary.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was very powerful. And this documentary, it was when she was 79. I think she's like 82 or 83 now. And it was about her whole life and a lot of parts of her life that, you know, probably only certain people knew about until this wise, brave change maker put herself out there. And I'm just bringing that in right now because it, to me, was inspirational for her to share and process, and it teaches people from what her life experience has been. I just feel like I think people get the same thing from you as I've been listening to your episodes about like real stuff. And then it makes me question, why are we so afraid to talk about these things that are universal? I mean, most of the time universal, not everyone gets divorced when they're because their spouse comes out, but a lot of people do. And because you talked about that, you're helping so many people. And the list goes on and on. So why do you think we are programmed not to talk about these tough things?
Well, I mean, I think I'm not the best example to be speaking to that, because for 10 years when I was running Scary Mommy and I was putting out, you know, all of this authenticity, I did have a secret life, and it wasn't, you know, it's too complicated to get into here now, but, you know, there were elements of my marriage that were very dysfunctional that I knew. And yeah, I held that very, very close. And I felt very fraudulent being as authentic as I was in so much of my life, but still having this like little bit of a secret life too. And it's nice not to have that anymore.
I've got good news and bad news. Let's start with the good news. Now that it's spring, we know that the warmth of summer is right around the corner. And now the bad news. As temperatures rise, so do the number of hot, sleepless nights. You know those ones where you toss and turn, tangled up in your sheets, damp from sweat, and only a miracle can get you through. Well, ask and you shall receive, because Miracle Made uses NASA-inspired silver-infused fabric to keep you cool and sweat-free all night. The silver infused into these sheets also prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. I know we don't want to be talking about bacterial growth in our sheets, but what this means is your skin should clear up just as summer sets in. And if you're worried about sacrificing comfort or quality, Miracle Made has 300 thread count bedding that is as luxurious as a five-star hotel without the hefty price tag. While I am waiting to get my sheets in the mail, I can tell you that Laura, our producer, has been sleeping on them and absolutely loves them. Go to trymiracle.com/footprint to try Miracle Made sheets today. Whether you buy them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use my code FOOTPRINT at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that they offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/footprint and use code FOOTPRINT to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/footprint to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. From listening to that episode with your friend and colleague who talked about the subject, what I would say, what I learned from that is, this is why I want to come to your defense, is when you're in a situation like that, you're trying to make sense of it. Like there's one thing about talking about something that you're processing. And then there's a whole nother thing when we are trying to actually figure out what is going on in our life and we're not sure.
Is that
fair for a piece of?
No, thank you. Yes. I appreciate that. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. And when you have little kids, you're just sort of in survival mode and you're like, none of my friends are having sex anyway. Everybody's, you know, kind of lukewarm at the moment about their spouse. Like it just sort of felt like everybody was sort of muddling through this, you know, tough stage and relationships were suffering left and right.
So then moving on to the other, tough topic that you shared, which I think is so helpful for people to hear, is your fairly recent mental health diagnosis. And I feel like this is such an important topic, not only because as we continue to destigmatize the spectrum of human characteristics and which everything is on a spectrum, but how many people go through life with some aspect of them which flies under the radar, or we white knuckle it, or we only know who we are. Like we don't have any idea who we like compared to anyone else. We just see things. And then how now with this new lens, first of all, like living without a label, and then how, is it fair to say how helpful an appropriate label can be to help make sense of parts of your life?
An appropriate label, I'm trying to properly answer this, and I think I'm struggling to understand it in order to do
so. Let me say diagnosis.
Sorry.
Diagnosis.
So I was diagnosed as having bipolar disorder, which came after, so my marriage combusted. I sold Scary Mommy and left it. And then everything kind of just I pretty much just like had a mental breakdown. Like everything, mm-hmm. I was so burnt out from work and I was so strained in my marriage and I was in New York working part-time and it was, everything was just so bad. And I had a series of like physical ailments that were troubling. And then I just kind of, had a manic episode, which I'd never had before. I didn't sleep mm-hmm. for like 7 days.
Wow.
And then became this magical creature who could do absolutely anything yeah. and rule the world. Yeah. And it was the best feeling I've ever had.
I hear that feels really good.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like, I can't imagine there being a better drug. And the fact mm-hmm. that like, you know, you have it inside of you and you have to like be medicated to keep it from coming out. And it's like this magic superpower. It frustrates me daily. And it's so bizarre because I had streaks of mania and depression throughout my life, but it had never, I never kind of got to that point where everything just cracked. Mm-hmm. So it was a comforting diagnosis to feel like, okay, at least I'm not, I mean, I want to say crazy, but for lag, I mean, at least, you know, it's not literally is in my head, but you know, at least there's a reason why I am feeling this way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's it. It's something that I'm still learning how to cope with. And, yeah, just mm-hmm. it's taken the last couple of years for me to figure out like, okay, I have to take my medication at this time. You can't play with your dosage. You can't think that you're right. You know more than your right. psychiatrist does. But yeah, I'm still yeah. definitely learning where this is concerned.
Well, and by way of for our listeners, just for educational purposes, you know, bipolar is used a lot and it's not a one size fits all. And so there right. is bipolar 1 and bipolar 2, because people want me listening like, wait, you're in your 40s and it's the first time that. And so I've heard you talk about that you're diagnosed with bipolar 2. So for everyone, bipolar 1 is usually what people think about in mainstream of bipolar, which are, I mean, some of the symptoms that you experienced with that manic episode,
yeah.
but you can't miss it. So with bipolar 1, there's often huge mood swings and dropping of impulses and people doing things they normally wouldn't do, you know, shopping yeah. sprees, other things. Like, if you can't miss it, and it often ends up in a hospital, yeah. which is the other, bipolar 1 often ends up in a hospital. Bipolar 2 is a more muted form, and as you and your friend had talked about, and there's a lot of depression in there in bipolar 2, like more than the actual high mania, which sucks, because the mania is the stuff that feels good.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always tip to the point of recognition,
yeah.
except patterned over time, or like after a lot of sleep deprivation, it can break through. So a lot of times people with bipolar 2 don't get diagnosed. They don't have this awareness till much yeah. later in life.
Yeah. Cause you just sort of think it's sensitivity. It's,
yeah.
you know, just normal mood fluctuations, but yeah, it's definitely more extreme than that. Yeah. And honestly, I've been in this depression slump for the last couple of months. And yeah, I really appreciated your introduction, cause it's when you're not, in that place, when you're like positive and optimistic and happy, it's right. you just sort of forget that you were all of those things. So
yes.
it was really nice to, yes. To,
okay.
To hear that.
I'm glad it was. Yes. Okay. That makes it all worth it. Since you, if we could just go a little farther with this, because I think this is so helpful. You brought up medicine, and it is often people often have a conflictual relationship with medicine, particularly people on the bipolar spectrum, because when you've dealt with a lot of depression, the mania or the hypomania, as we call it, that don't reach that those really high highs but feel really good, like that's the good stuff, and then mm-hmm. and then you're supposed to take medicine which takes that away. So there, ambivalence is the
it
word
feels
I was looking
so
for
wrong.
Like it yeah yeah. So how has that process, if you don't mind me asking, how has that process been for you? Because it's such a normal process in my experience.
Yeah. Well, I learned a hard lesson about 6 months after my diagnosis when I got a little cocky with my medication. I didn't stop taking it exactly, but I would just sort of be lax about when I'd take it, and then I'd forget, and I figure, well, I'm not going to double up, so I just won't take it for 3 days in a row, and I just got really lazy about taking it. Now I have a pill box that I fill every Sunday, and it's very habitual, and I don't resent the medication anymore, but for years, I felt like, why am I taking you? You are literally making me unhappy. You are making me a worse version of myself. This is not fair. But then I have to remind myself that for every hypomanic episode I've had to pay for it times, 10. The depression is so not worth the mania.
Right.
Even though at the moment the mania feels so much better, the depression is so much longer. And in bipolar two, it's so much worse.
Yes. Yes. So in process still, right? In process.
With it all. And I think that's why I'm doing it is not, I'm not in a position with anything where I'm, teaching my learnings to a community. Right. I'm there, trying to figure it all out too.
Yeah. There was a time in my life when I was taking medicine for depression and I hated it. I hated the idea that I needed to take it. And I held out for so long until my psychologist is like, Dan, you do this for a living. What would you be recommending to someone in your situation? And I'm like, well, obviously medicine.
But I'm different.
And I went through a very similar process. Again, I haven't experienced the mania or hypomania, but got to a point where it's like, I don't need this. I'm fine. And then so there's this experiment, and then you kind of either talk to your doctor and go down or do it on your own and go down. And when the bad stuff would come back, I felt like in hindsight, those were the things I needed to experience to try to figure out what I needed at the time. Because when it comes back, you're like, oh gosh, give me the medicine, because I don't want to feel like this is terrible. What was I even thinking? So it is definitely, it can be a tug of war.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, but either way, depression's the worst. So
it sucks.
Trying to get out of that place is imperative.
It sucks. And again, I'm glad for people listening, when you're in a depressive state, you might be thinking like, how does Jill not remember who she is and what she's accomplished? And there you go. Like that is what depression does to us. It takes away our sense of ourself. It takes away our how we see possibilities, how we see joy, how we it changes our perception. It literally changed our perception of ourself, of others, and the world. And it is magical when we get it back. And so I just want to keep pushing that out there for you and for everyone. It's like, it's right on the other side. It sucks, but it is right on the other side. And the guidance that I was given when I was in it, and the guidance I give my clients, is we have to see this as temporary. As terrible as it is, we have to see it as temporary, because it's this neurochemical process that it's working itself out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not, when you're in it, it feels so hopeless.
Yes.
But like you said, it's just, you just need to get to the other side of it. Yes. And the other side is there. And I'm speaking to myself as well. And I'm not as low, like my lows are so low. Mm-hmm. I'm not in one of those now. I'm just kind of in a slump that I can't really get out of. But everything, the world just feels so blah right now. It's, it feels like, it would feel insincere for me to feel like overly happy right now.
Well, let me validate that. The world. The world is a very difficult place. And we have lots of our fellow humans suffering, and lots of things don't make sense. I'm going to turn here from our depression conversation and the importance of purpose. And because depression takes away our purpose. It takes away our meaning. And one of the things that we need to do when we're feeling that way is like fight for that meaning and fight for that purpose. And it seems like she's got issues, the brand, all of it, the podcast, the magazine. Is that purpose for you?
It is. Thank you. And that's a good reminder to me because that's what I want it to be. I want it to be the thing that when Scary Mommy made me the happiest, it was not once I sold it. It was like 3, 4, 5 years in when things were just turning along. We had an audience. We had a great staff. Everything was like, just felt like it was a great level. And then there was a tipping point and it just got too big and it was out of control and it lost its enjoyment for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to be building something that I can, I mean, it's hard to compete with Scary Mommy, but I have, you know, I now want something that will comfort and sustain me as well, you know, for this next chunk
yes.
of my life.
Yes. So if I may, I feel compelled to say this, that there is no need to compete with Scary Mommy because you created Scary Mommy. It still exists, not in the form that you created. but you created, again, I would, and I'm so sincere about this, you created an industry that did not exist that has helped so many. And this new venture is a new venture with similar but different goals. And it already is a success. Like it, to me, it's apples and oranges. It's this is what you are creating it. And it's like the second act, but the first act never goes away. And the second act never has to, I don't feel, be compared to the first.
God, I hope your audience finds value in this conversation because I feel like this has just been the best therapy session ever for me. So thank you. Truly. That's a really wonderful way of reframing things. Yeah, really. Thank you.
Yeah. God, I'm glad you can take that in because I think for many of us, I'm just going to jump on a limb, many of us with very high standards and perfectionistic thinking, like to say perfectionism in recovery, there's this never enough thing that gets us. Like, it's like not enough. And it is enough. Like, I think we just have to keep telling ourselves, like, it is enough. Like, every little thing makes such a big difference with the ripple effect. Yeah. And you now are a voice talking about all the stuff. Like I honestly, when I was preparing, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to listen to a little of this. And I'm just going to listen to a little of this. But all of the topics, I know, I mean, I am Gen X, but I'm not a Gen X woman. I'm like, you know, my wife is, we talk about all this stuff all the time. I'm like, I was hooked in. Like you're talking about all of the real things, and those conversations help I know that you're talking to a lot of peers, but I could just feel like they grow from the conversations. And then all of the listeners who are like, give me more, give me more, give me more. And anyways, I'm repeating, but that's enough. That is more than enough.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So I'll dig a little. Do you actually have a goal for this? You know, like, is there a goal? Because in perfectionistic ways, we actually like think there's a goal, but it's totally unobtainable, but it's actually not, you know, it's like something you never can reach versus, yeah, I want to achieve this and have this many this. And, you know, like, where is it for you?
I depends on what day you ask me. Mm-hmm. Today I want it to pay my bills and, make me happy. Mm-hmm. That's my focus right now.
Nice.
I love the magazine you mentioned. That's like my background is graphic design. That's what I truly love doing and like really geek out on. So that I'm having fun with the podcast. I'm loving reconnecting with, you know, old scary mommy people and peers and all that stuff. I'm in a position where I don't want to go back to work for somebody else ever. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely an entrepreneur, and I love this brand, and I feel passionate about the topics, and I don't see a clear path as to where exactly I want it to go, mm-hmm. but I know that I want it to feel authentic, and I want to love it, however it evolves. I don't want to let it go and let it turn into some, you know, version of itself that, I'm not happy with and proud of.
Yes. All right. I like, those are great goals, right?
Good.
Those are great goals. Right. Hey, help, pay for your life, make you happy, and provide good content out there that helps people.
Right.
Right. Like, that's so simple, right?
At to boot.
Yeah. And I just think it's interesting. Like, there are, how I've always done things in business was more like how you do Scary Mommy. Like, there's not really a business plan. It's more like going on like what feels right and intuition.
Just wing it.
Yeah. And for everyone, for all you MBAs out there who are really good at spreadsheets, I appreciate that skill, because there are lots of learning along the way.
Someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do that stuff. and yet, I think you look at what you did with Scary Mommy with no plan, and it was based on passion and purpose, and it became. And so I'm a proponent of that. Like, if we can continue to lean in, and of course you have all this business experience now from mm-hmm. that experience, if we continue to lean into what's meaningful for us and your goals of, is this making me happy and can this pay my bills? And if they're not, I need to do some adjustments here. I think it just all unfolds.
Well, let's hope so.
Yes.
I like it.
Knocking on wood right here.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Okay. So being a Gen X person, Gen X woman, how would you even describe that? Because I listed the you know, the issues related. Is there a way that you can describe what it, like, to you, what it is being a Gen X woman?
Yeah, I mean, officially, I forget what the years are, but I think of it more as just sort of being in the middle of it all right now. You know, we're the sandwich generation right now. We have aging parents coming to terms with that. Our kids are getting older. So I identify with it very much just from a stage in life where I am right now. Perimenopause being a huge one. I think that just is sort of women, middle age, you know, in general. Gen X wise, I mean, culturally, I think that's our audience really is liking old movies and references to old songs, just all the sort of old nostalgia that comes along with being Gen X. So that's something that I'm trying to, that is one part that doesn't, I'm a little bit young on the Gen X side. So some of the older Gen X stuff goes over my head, and that's when it starts to feel like, is this really me? And is this me, or is this who I want the audience to be? And I have to kind of figure that out.
Yeah.
So that's, sort of towing that now.
Mm-hmm. So what is your, when you think about the content of the magazine and you think about your podcast, the content, what are you looking for? What are you trying, like, in your mind, what are you trying to put out there to your listeners?
I'm trying to put out authentic conversations on topics that we are curious about and aren't being talked about often enough, or are being talked about in a very clinical way. So I'm trying to approach the conversations in a very, you know, frank, funny, casual, easily digestible way, and in a way that I would want to consume it. I love listening to podcasts. I love listening to conversations. So I think that's, what I hope to be offering.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say, what is when I say that, what is scary mommy now? Like with your, like, you know, but let me say more, because I think that could go in a different direction that I don't mean. In the sense of you were scary mommy because your son was in that phase and made up that term, and then it became this huge thing. What is it like, how would you describe that, what scary mommy is with these older kids, right? Like, what is it now?
I think now it's sort of the real scary mommy. I feel like, you know, scary mommy, it was sort of, you know, facetious, and then it really became kind of an empowered movement. Like, you had like this badge of honor, like, you were a scary mommy, you were gritty, you were like honest, you were authentic, you were sort of in there in the mud. And now I think of it more as like, we're in the real world now. Like, we don't have like the little kids to cling to anymore. Mm-hmm. I used to talk about, like, I found the most comforting, you know, body image salvage being like, kids, pile on top of me so nobody needs to see my body. And like, we don't have those kids anymore to throw on top of ourselves and hide mm-hmm. under. Like, mm-hmm. it all feels more naked without the little kids.
Yeah. Yes, so much less control, or at least we had much more, I guess, control and perceived control when they were younger. And then, now it's like, you not only change from your primary parenting role, but you also change with your ability to influence. And it feels, in my experience, like, it's almost like it's this exercise in having to learn to completely relinquish control, realizing you have so little.
Ugh, isn't that what it boils down to?
Yes, I guess we just came to the we solved the whole meaning of life, right? Yeah. But I think we have involved parents have a hard time coming to that reality, and usually it just, the lessons are keep getting put in our face that we have to reconcile it. How do your kids feel about this latest venture?
They're happy about it. They miss, they really benefited from the early days of Scary Mommy. They loved it. I used to go to conferences and we'd have toys sent to us. They get to try things out before they went on the market. They thought that was so fun. And then there was a chunk of time where that lapsed and they saw, you know, zero, you know, sort of benefit from anything. And they also saw a mom who wasn't working for a period of time and was very unfulfilled and needed, I need work to fuel me. And when I didn't have it for years, I was really in a slump for a while. So I think they appreciate that I'm doing something new. My daughter, amazingly, is at Boston University and she's studying like magazine design and communications following in my footsteps. I'm like, I love this so much. So they're excited about it. They're like, when are we going to get some stuff? When are we going to get a trip out of this?
Totally. Totally.
Someday, kids, someday I'll make it all about you.
Yes.
Cool.
I'm sure they are very proud of you.
Well, they're sweet. Two out of my three have read the books and they were very, they appreciated them. I think it was sort of like a bit of a baby book to them, which made me happy.
Yeah. Okay, Jill. It's that time for the
It's coming.
There it is. The print moment question. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual, as a mom, or even an awareness of your own parents, and that new awareness had a positive impact on your life, your kids, and or others you love.
Okay. I'm going to go with, I have a very vivid memory of being at summer camp. I was probably, I don't know, 8 or 9. And it was a rainy day and we watched Free to Be You and Me. Mm. And there was a song, Parents or People with Children. I remember hearing it and just having this like profound epiphany. Like, they are? Like, my parents are people. And my mind was blown. And it really just changed the way, and not that I had this very evolved sense of my parents, but I, from that point on, just was aware that they were not, they didn't just come about when I was born. They had a whole life before them that really fascinated me. And I think going into my own parenthood, I was very aware that they were flawed. They were, you know, they did the best they could, but they were just people. And I think that sort of allowed me to become the type of parent I was, where I didn't feel like I had to do everything perfectly. And I felt, you know, like I was doing the best I could. It was okay. You know, if I didn't have this rigidity or whatever, that I turned out okay. And that I'm just a person. And hopefully my kids will see that someday.
Yes. Ah, that's so good, right? And that was such a powerful album. And
Oh, I mean, that whole album's so good. And
but you're so right, that awareness of when we realize our parents are these mortal people and the mixed feelings that go with that.
Yes. You almost feel deceived. Like,
what?
Yes, like what? You didn't tell me all of this?
Yeah.
And I thought I knew you.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of our kids when my wife, they were older, and she came to my wife and said, you know, what do I do here? And she said, you know, honey, I actually have no idea. It was like the first time she gave, instead of the, like, here's what you do. And later, much later, she came back to us. She said, like, I like honestly thought you always knew. Like, it was like a turning point of like, I honestly thought like you always knew what to do in these situations. It was like this monumental and important moment, but it's also like, oh man, things are not what I thought they were. Yeah. Well, Jill, thank you for what you're doing and this conversation today, and just sharing yourself as you do. I'll say it again. It is inspirational. It's inspirational for me, just to be able to, I don't know, going back to that quote, like our private life, our personal life, or public, personal, and secret life, and like how can we integrate and not have shame and put out the reality of what we're experiencing and doing, because most others are having similar experiences, and we are so not alone.
Right. And the things that we feel the most alone about are the things that we aren't. And, you know, we are in such good company if we just start talking about it.
Yes. And that is what you're doing. So tell everyone about where they can find everything about the brand. She's Got Issues.
She's Got Issues, you know, the website, the podcast. I'm Jill Smokler on Instagram. She's Got Issues Media. Just Google it and just come find me.
Find her, everyone. You will not.
Please find me.
You will not be sorry.
Thank you, Dr. Dan. Yeah. I needed this, and thank you. I really appreciate all of your kindness.
You are very welcome. I'm so glad that we did this, and I hope we can do it again someday.
Oh, likewise.
All right, everyone. I know you're thinking about all the people that you're going to share this episode with, all the people who will feel connected, will feel not alone, will feel human together. Please share. Thank you for bringing all of your wonderful people to our community and for being a part of our community. You know, we appreciate your reviews. They really make a difference. Finally, the last two things I always ask you to do: try to be that person you want your child to become. There are going to be some tough days. That is human. All you can do is try. And finally, ask yourself that guiding question: what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.